The call is now recorded. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone on today's IRD call on Monday, the 12th of September. We have Rafik Damak, Jim Galvin, Owen Snegelski, Avery Doria. From staff, we have Steve Sheng and myself, Gisela Gruber. Apologies noted from Dave Piscitello, Julie Headland, and Salmaat Hussain. And if I could please just remind everyone to state their names when speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you. Over to you, Jim and Steve.
Thank you. So this is Jim Galvin. Yes, we have a draft final report, and Steve has been putting a lot of time and effort into this. He still has a few editor's notes in the report, but I think that this has been we've had some really good discussions in the last few meetings. So hopefully we are getting much closer to closure here. Steve, let me ask you if you have a preference. You and I didn't coordinate just prior to this as to how you want to run this. Do you have some things you want to step through, or would you prefer to open the floor for questions or something else entirely?
Let me think. There are a few editor notes I would like to address, but maybe we can step through the report section by section, and I will I did make some changes. I'll highlight to the group what changes I make so that, you know, everyone is aware, and then we can discuss whether the approach or the text is appropriate. There aren't many, but there are a few of those. So during that process, we can also address the editor's comments. I don't know whether that's a feasible approach, acceptable approach to you.
Yeah. Okay. Does anyone on the call want to suggest something different, or is what Steve proposing okay with folks?
Sounds like a good idea.
Okay, Steve, let me turn it over to you, and you can start at whatever you think is the top and step through.
Okay, thank you. Could everyone open the report that I sent, Thursday night or Friday morning last week? If you have it open, let me know. If you have problem, you know, finding that, let me know.
Hi, this is Steve Metallitz. I just joined. Sorry, I'm late.
Hi, Steve. We are stepping through the report.
Okay, great.
But we haven't started. Yeah.
Yeah, he's just asking folks to open up the copy that he distributed last Friday, and Steve is going to step through and just give a quick highlight on the substantive changes in each section and give folks a chance to comment, and he'll call out the editor's notes, too, along the way.
Great.
Yeah. Okay, so we'll go over section by section. By the way, for this section, I've also incorporated comments from Steve Metallitz and Jian Kang Yao. Thank you very much for those comments. So the executive summary, I have an editor note here. It's saying, you know, currently it's not really a summary. It's once we finalize everything, I will add a paragraph, you know, explaining what our findings and recommendations are in greater detail. So I don't anticipate that will be a problem. Introduction, I tied up the text to address one of the editor's comments from John Clinton. John is a very well-respected internationalization expert, so I took his comment. Other than that is, it's nothing major. The introduction basically highlights why this is a problem. So it cites both the Internet Architecture Board's statement in RFC 4690, as well as SEC 37, the report, and, you know, the kind of the background for this work. So there's nothing major there. Section 2.1,
Steve,
go ahead.
This is Steve Metallitz. I just noticed in section two, you deleted this sentence about IDNs.
Right. So this is was addressing the editor's, John Clinton's comment. So John Clinton's comment is, you know, IDN does not contribute too much about the multilingual, the internet. It contributes only a little bit, and having it there may distract people's attention from the real issue. So the real issue here is when internet is being used by people around the world, and then it's truly multilingual, and we cannot expect people to know and enter this information in English. So that was the real issue, and John's.
I don't have a problem with that. I'm just pointing out that was where we said internationalized domain names paren IDN, so we explained what IDN meant. And
right.
As it stands now, we just dive in that quote with IDN. So if
I see what you mean. Okay.
Explain what that is. That was my. I'm not arguing with the substantive point there.
Okay.
Totally editorial.
I'll think about it. So
there should be some way to do.
Okay. Thanks for that note. Mm-hmm. Let me put a note to myself on the. Make sure the IDN is not too broad. Okay. So nothing really changed from. This is about the same from the interim report. So nothing really changes here. Section 2.1. Here I added the whole text of the board resolution. Before, in the interim report, we just kind of cite part of the resolution. Here, I just, for completeness sakes, I put all the board resolution here on this. So the major difference here that I make is the working group interprets in page 5, I think is a very important section, that the working group interprets the board's request as two broad questions. So the two broad questions I did not change, but I added a few sub-bullets to distinguish them better. The reason for this is we have a lot of text that we did not end up using in the final report. And I have to go back and see which texts are useful to include. So I readjust, I parse out the questions here a little bit. I have a discussion on that if possible. So the board asks for the suitability and feasibility of introducing display specifications to deal with the internalization of registration data. So I separate them as suitability issue and feasibility issue. Under suitability issue, I have three sub-bullets. The first kind of it's almost stating the obvious, is it suitable or desirable to internationalize domain name registration data? That means, is it suitable to have that data represented in scripts and in codings other than U.S. ASCII? So that's kind of the very first fundamental question. And then the second one, if it's suitable, what data element is it suitable to be internationalized? And I think the working group went to great lengths discussing what data element those to be internationalized. And then the third question is it suitable to introduce display specifications to deal with the internationalized registration data? So those are the suitability issues. And then under feasibility, there are two issues. So the first one is the current HUIT system capable of handling the query and display of internationalized domain name registration data? And the second is it feasible to introduce display specifications? So those are the ways that I parse out the board's request. I'd like to hear people's thoughts. It's a little bit fine-grained than previous draft, but I'd like to hear people's thought on this.
This is Steve Metalitz. I think it's good to have the questions spelled out a little bit. I did have one question. You took out, I think, the reference to submission specifications in the last bullet.
The last,
yeah, it says, is it feasible to introduce, and then on the red lines, it has submission and was deleted, display specifications.
So is it on the feasibility or the suitability?
Second bullet under feasibility.
A second to introduce submission. Okay.
Yeah.
Is it feasible?
The only reason I raise that is that when we talk about, you know, should there be a must-be-present script, we're basically saying, you know, or not.
Okay.
We're basically saying this. That's a submission specification kind of, isn't it?
Oh, yes. Good point. So submission. So maybe the submission should also be added under suitability, right?
I think that's right.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll add submission and display to both suitability and feasibility. Is that okay with everyone?
This is Aubrey. In principle, yes. Wouldn't it be entry and display, though, as opposed to submission and display? Speaking about it as the mechanics of doing it, just a small point.
Yeah, I'm fine either way. Yeah.
Okay. Other participants on the call, what do you think of adding submission to both the third bullet on the suitability and the second bullet under the feasibility? Any objections?
Submission or entry, I think, is what.
Submission or entry.
No. Either the word submission or the word entry, both of them.
I understand.
Maybe I suggest we keep submission because it will be consistent for both. Okay. Okay, I don't hear objections. So if people have objections, they can raise it later on, I guess. Okay, so those are the three. I think this section is important because in the findings section, I go question by question. I answer each of the questions based on what we discussed. So this is almost as a framing, you know, outline here. And I'll update the sections accordingly. So the IRD membership, that's the same from the last one. There's not much to discuss. Terminology. So the terminology, the major one, there are two major changes here from the interim report. The first major change is ASAC is working on a advisory on terminology for WHOIS, and they did a PowerPoint presentation in the last Singapore meeting, and they are working on a full report on this, which they will release fairly soon. So I have a kind of an early copy for that I include the three terms they defined. Domain name registration data, the domain name registration data access protocol, and the domain name registration data directory service. So the basic rationale for having separate out these three instead of just saying WHOIS is because the term WHOIS without qualification, it could mean very different things to different people. So here the goal is trying to bring precision in the discussion to know when we talk about WHOIS, what we are really talking about. Are we really talking about the data? Are we talking about the access protocol? Or are we talking about the directory service that implements the protocol, provides access to the data, and sets policies? So those trying to parse those out more carefully. If I think, Jim?
Yes, go ahead.
Do you know when the ASAC advisor will be published?
I would say, Steve, that since you're the editor, any day now, right?
Edited advanced copy. So it'll be any day. So if they do have revisions, then we will.
Yeah, I mean it's in last call, and you know, so Steve's got it's in last call. I guess you sent it to me, and because I'm also chair of that work party over there on the SX side, just for context for folks here on this call. But it will certainly be out well before this document's going to be out. So you know, we'll be able to reference that document for this, and folks will be able to see the complete thing that's in there also.
Okay, sure. So the next section about terminology is I added a few terms here. I added translation, the definition of translation and transliteration from the RFC 6365, which just been finalized last week as well in the IETF. So I think those are important because later on we're going to talk about translation and transliteration. So it would be nice to have that. I also added thick registry because we did talk about that in the later section. So there are some other terms. This section is not yet complete. There are some terminologies later on that needs to be expanded. So I need to, once we have everything, I need to go a thorough look to see any new terms that needs to be included here. But other than that, those are the major changes.
I have a quick question.
Go ahead, Avery.
Are the definitions that you've got for domain name registration data, et cetera, exactly the same as those that will come out in this advisory? Or are they...
Currently, it is exactly
okay,
the same.
Okay, great, thanks.
But if
so
they revise...
So consistent. If they change, you would change them in both places?
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
Any other questions on terminologies? Okay, all right, moving on to background. I think we discussed this extensively during the outline phase. We haven't changed very much. Well, actually, we haven't changed anything. To this. So so I talk about what data elements are there in the RAA. I talk about the RD makes a few observations where some registries are subject to slightly different requirements, and also in the CCTLDs, each operator sets its own policy regarding what constitutes this data and what to be displayed in the directory service. So those are the same. Oh, by the way, when I'm going through, if you have any issues, just let me know directly so that, you know.
This is Aubrey. Just to let you know, I've noticed a couple typos, but I'll send those to you separately. I won't bring them up during the meeting.
Sure. Yeah. Section 3.2, we talk about where are the different data elements collected, stored, and displayed. And we have collection, storage, and display. Steve made a comment about the data escrow, so I added a sentence there. For ICANN accredit registrars, the data escrow provision in the RIA requires them to regularly deposit a backup copy of their GTLD registration data with ICANN.
This is Steve Metallis. I'm not sure that's right. I mean, it's an escrow provision. It's not deposited with ICANN, is it? It can be deposited with a third party.
Well, it's an ICANN specified third party.
Yeah, you just need to tweak the words there a little bit, Steve, because it's an ICANN requirement, but they're submitted to approved third parties.
To deposit a backup copy with the ICANN approved third party?
Yeah. Actually, you could probably just stop you could just remove the with ICANN clause and just stop there. And not try to explain it in detail.
Or this is all you can say, or registration data as required by ICANN, and then that kind of is a little bit more broad and cover, should cover all of that.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so I'll say GTLD registration data as required by ICANN. Thank you for that. So for display here, I really changed, because since we're using a new terminologies, so I want to I make sure that we're using the new terminology. Okay, so for display, for SIG registries, the query displays the data on the registries, domain name registration data directory service, and from the registrar's directory service if known to user. Right? For thin registries, the query displays the data from the registry's directory service, and some clients could pass the data and continue to query the registrar's directory service. So I'm just trying to bring some clarity by using the term we defined above.
This is Avery. If known to user,
right.
I'm not sure that the phrase parses correctly for me.
So let me try to explain. Maybe it's really a poor English here on my part. So the a registrant may not know what the registrar's who his server is. So without knowing that, he or she cannot query that.
That's what you mean. Okay.
Right. So in some cases, it's not known. Yeah.
But the user wouldn't have made a query then to that SIC registry. The registry will always display the data.
Right.
If it gets a query. So I'm not sure. The if known to user is a confusing way to say it to me, at least.
Okay. So maybe if you have some suggested text, let me. I don't know
you
if I can.
You need to say anything there. I'm not sure that you do need to be specific. Because if you've made a query,
right?
If anything, you would put it up in the top sentence, I think. End user, you know, basically explanation of where they're making a query, and then, but as a if known to user just confused me. But as I say, it may just be me.
No, actually, this is Jim Galvin. I think Aubrey makes a good point. I think we should probably just remove that phrase. And, you know, really, it's probably too much information for us to have to address, you know, how a user makes the query. I think we should assume that a user is capable of figuring that out and doing it.
If this is Aubrey again. If you're going to say anything, you'd add a sentence above saying, you know, the user may make a query of the registry, if known, or of the registrar. And if you want to make sure that information is given somewhere, that's where I would recommend putting it.
Okay, I will take a note myself to write a few texts, some text on this, or revise the sentence. Okay, so that's 3.2. Any other comments on 3.2? Okay. You're numb. By the way, my apologies for sending this report late. I was in another meeting that week. So I realize not all of you have a chance to go through it in detail. So if you have time to go through in detail and have more questions, feel free to raise it on the list or suggest it, edits and comments. You know, just mark up this document. I really appreciate that. So section 3.3, I basically added a few text, you know, expanding the WHOIS protocol description a little bit, you know, how that protocol works. And then, you know, a couple bullets, you know, the protocol has no constraints on the data it transports. The only constraint is they must be terminated with the ASCII line feed and carriage return. The protocol has not been internationalized. You know, it's even written within the RFC itself, it's not internationalized. the protocol does not define a structured data schema. So those are the kind of the background about the WHOIS protocol. Those are fairly standard. So I'm going to section 3.4. Section 3.4 is a section that I need probably more time to write about. So 3.4, we said current practices by GTLD registries and registrars and ccTLDs to support the display of internationalized data. So I haven't really finished this section, I'm sorry. I was hoping to separate that section into GTLD practice and ccTLD practice and put whatever we know about those practices on the table. So that's to the extent I'm planning to write at this section. If you have more suggestions or guidance, I really appreciate that. So for the interest of time, I suggest we go into findings directly. Okay, before we go into findings, do participants have any major issues with the above sections, sections 1, 2, and 3? If so, I would appreciate if you could raise it now. Okay. Hearing none, let's go to finding section. So as I mentioned earlier, the way I structured findings is to answer those board's questions directly. So the first section, we organize the findings as responses to the board's questions. So the first one is it suitable to internationalize domain name registration data? This is pretty much the same it's pretty much the same with the previous findings that we've discussed in the outline. Section 4.2, what data elements are suitable to be internationalized? So what I did here, I moved stuff around. The first couple paragraphs I say, what are the data elements? So taken from the RA, what are the categories of the data element? And then we talk about, how they could be internationalized separately. So this is pretty much from the interim report. And then one question is about the dates. We have not discussed whether or how to internationalize this. I think probably for completeness sake, we need to do that. Could we have a quick discussion on this? Hello?
Hello.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I don't know if I'm talking, if my line was...
Yeah, I'm reading as we talk, so...
Oh, okay.
Could you repeat your question?
So we talked about date, right? But we have not talked about whether or how to internationalize this field.
Yeah, my recollection was that everybody thought that was pretty straightforward, but maybe maybe
pretty
not.
Straightforward. Well, it's straightforward, but we need to talk about it briefly.
Yeah, I thought this is Aubrey. I thought somebody had mentioned, and I don't remember who or exactly what the answer was, that there was some standards body that had standardized how dates would be expressed internationally.
Right.
but I don't remember the information. I just remember someone knew, someone said, and I'm not sure how to recall it. But I thought that there was some standardization somewhere.
Yeah.
So this is Jim. Maybe we should look through the archive and the mailing list. I'm just thinking that we didn't do that before, and maybe there's a reference there historically. I mean, I guess that's the issue. I'm kind of with Avery. I sort of have this recollection that we had put something on the table, but I don't remember what that was or the reference.
Okay. So I'll take an action item to dig that out, and if I couldn't find it, I'll just try to find those standards and send it to the mailing list and see if we can agree on that. Is that okay with people?
Yeah, I would say that if you don't find it, you know, relatively quickly in the archive, send a note to the mailing list and just ask if anyone recalls. And then, you know, in parallel with that, see if you can look around and find something.
Okay. Sure.
Yeah. I mean, if it's a standard, we should be able to find it relatively easily. Otherwise, it's not much of a standard.
Right.
Yeah. What's interesting is ASN1 would obviously have some kind of reference to a date format. I mean, it has a date format, and it, in fact, might have some references to where it got it from.
Right.
There is an ISO 8601 that may be worth checking as well.
Okay. I'll do that.
So there's at least a couple of starting points.
Okay. So that's fine. I'll do that. Regarding the registration status, we talk about using the exact EPP code. There was an editor comment that, for example, ccTLDs may not use EPP at all. So those codes does not mean anything to them. So I guess that's a question for the whole group. What do we do in that circumstance?
Well, the reason this is Steve Metallitz. The reason this is in here is because we're looking at what's required in the registrar accreditation agreement, right? Which is only GTLDs. So I'm not sure. We're obviously CCTLDs may have their own different lists of data and everything else. We're not trying to address that, are we? The reason it's in here is because it's in the. Because it applies to GTLDs.
Yes. So I completely agree with you. But on the other hand, this raises the issue, the extent of impact of this report. So if we are too GTLD centric, then it will only be applied to GTLDs. So. Maybe we could add a sentence and say, note that ccTLDs do not use EPP at all, and we recommend, you know, some effort being made to standardize this field by then.
Well, they may not even have that field. I mean, that's the point,
yeah,
isn't it?
Exactly.
So, but I don't object to having a sentence that points out that this doesn't apply to ccTLDs, but for particular ccTLDs, some of these other data points don't apply either.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
This is Robert. It could be a two-tiered recommendation that basically acknowledges that they don't. If they use EPP, it is recommended that, you know, they use the same format. And,
okay.
You know, and perhaps even a recommendation that, you know, EPP be considered. You know, but that's going perhaps too far. But certainly,
yeah.
A recommendation that says for any CCTLD that does use EPP, it is recommended that they follow the same Well, you wouldn't want to say recommend that they follow the same recommendation because that's redundant. But
okay.
You know what I mean.
Okay, I like that approach. And do we have any objections on that? Here and now, I will write some text in line with Avery's recommendation. Okay, so then I have this table summarize the discussions in this section. So maybe here we can quickly talk about this table and see if this is what we are agreeing to, and if not, then let's rediscuss. So I think this table summarizes what we all discussed before.
Steve, this is Owen. Just to make a note that dates is something we're to consider. So make sure to have a note to follow up on it when we decide that.
Yeah. So do people have any comments on this table?
Well, you'll want to update the date row, but other than that, I think it accurately represents where we are.
Okay. All right. So let's move on to 4.3. Whether to support the translational transliteration of entity name and contact information into a single script or language. Okay, this, the previous section talked about different elements to be internationalized. And we sort of agreed that the entity name and address, the registrar should be able to submit this in their local language or script. But then there's an issue here is to balance the needs and capabilities of the local registrant with the need of global user of the data. We consider the question is whether to support translation or transliteration. So this is a section that I put in a lot of text, and I think we... this is an important section. I think we probably want to spend more time on this. The major text I put in are added a discussion on translation and transliteration. So on the middle of page 15, I list the four models. And I say, it's described in the appendix. We examine these models, but we cannot reach consensus on which one to choose, and kind of explain why, we could not reach consensus. So the first reason is the language translation systems are inexact and cannot be applied repeatedly. So I gave some examples that, thanks to Dr. Samart's example, that people may translate differently even within the same language and the same person. And then, the word Muhammad could be translated into all these different spellings, and it's not exact.
Steve, this is Steve Metallitz. On that point... Go ahead. Is that really an example of translation or of transliteration? Not really a translation, because it's just trying to render a name phonetically.
Right. Is it a translation or a transliteration? Let me think here. Is it a translation or is it a transliteration?
This is Owen. I think it's kind of a hybrid of both. It's not like if you were to, picking, Berlin or, maybe Cologne in Germany, and the way it's kind of standardized English version that you translate it to. You don't actually transliterate it. Mohammed is something where there's no officially agreed acceptable English translation. It kind of varies. So it's kind of a translation and transliteration issue.
Okay, so what I hear comments is this example needs to be further discuss whether it's translation or transliteration. Okay. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, I think I view it as transliteration because it's not, I mean, all of these spellings are, none of these are English words. This is somebody's name, so it's just different ways of writing the same name. I think the point is well taken that there's a lot of variation, but I think it's more an example of transliteration than translation. But
okay, I take. Go ahead.
Oh, this is Owen. I agree. I certainly think it's an example to include, but I agree. You know, maybe a transliteration as opposed to translation, but it certainly highlights the issues that we have here that we're addressing.
Right.
So this is Jim. Steve, let me suggest that you take these comments back to Sarmad and,
yeah, I need,
you know.
I don't know Arabic. So.
Offer them back to him and say, this is what people were saying, and ask him if he can, you know.
Sure. Actually, I may be asking.
On the list to these comments so that we can... find some closure here. If we need a different example, let's try and find something that is
okay.
Does demonstrate the point.
Sure. So moving on to we have a section that discusses about translation. The basic key point is it's inexact and cannot be applied repeatedly. You know, this is what the RFC said. So I just go directly from the RFC. The second one is the RFC does said. Many script translations are exact, and many have perfect round-trip mappings. And there are all official standards. So, you know, the ISO standard, which I did cite below. By the way, we have an international standard section. I removed that, and I just put those two standards everywhere in the document. Where they are applicable. So the rationale is really there are standards there. I think it's better if they are referenced within the context. So the question with transliteration is, actually there are two issues. I only wrote one here. So it's not clear whether transliteration will meet the community needs for the data. I gave an example that, for example, the word street in Chinese is jie or lu. It will be transliterated into jie or lu, you know, directly. But however, a non-native Chinese speaker would have no idea what those transliterated words mean. So even we put a transliteration there, it may not be feasible for someone to find out, a non-native speaker to figure out what that is. So that's one. The other problem with transliteration is within the romanization, a specialized part of the transliteration is also inexact as well. So those are the two issues. Which with transliteration, which I didn't have time to put in here.
Steve, this is Steve Metallitz.
Go ahead.
I think the point you make there in your indented bullet about the street in Chinese, I mean, the point is accurate. That doesn't necessarily mean that information is not useful.
Right.
For example, if you were trying to compare whether the same... multiple registrations were associated with the same address, then as long as street were transliterated the same way each time, or even if you knew if the jie and lu both were transliterations of street, then you would be able to associate one with the other, even if you didn't actually know what that meant. So your point is right. It isn't necessarily intelligible, but that doesn't mean it's not useful.
Right. So that... Thank you exactly for that point, which will be the third point I raise. I think this is a policy question. The third bullet have, there's a set of important policy questions that the working group could not tackle due to its lack of expertise and lack of participation from key stakeholders, such as the registrars. So that's the first policy question I highlight. What are contact names and addresses used for? And I think that needs to be decided before we can tell whether the information loss and consistency issues associated with translation and transliteration is acceptable. So to me, that's almost a meta issue that needs to be resolved. You know, I don't know whether that's a policy issue. I don't know whether this group should resolve that. But someone should resolve that, and then we can decide whether translation or transliteration is acceptable due to its information loss. So, for example, to put it concretely, if the information is mainly used to do automatic pattern matching, then transliteration is probably enough. But if it is used to contact people, through those addresses, then transliteration is probably not enough. So that's a high-level issue that I highlighted here. And another highlight issue I highlighted is
definitely a relevant issue, but there has been quite a bit of work done in ICANN over the years on this question of what our contact names and addresses used for. I mean, we had a whole task force that looked at that, and there was a big survey done about 10 years ago that looked at that. I'm not trying to extract any conclusions from that, but just to say that there has been a lot of work done on that topic already. If we raise this question, we might want to reference that.
Okay. So you're saying maybe this question has already been answered.
Well, it's certainly been addressed, yeah.
Okay, let me take a note to reference. Okay. Okay, that's good. Yeah, if it is addressed, then I don't need to raise it again. I just need to reference it where this is addressed, and there's community consensus on that one. So, what do people think of this point? Oh, silence. Okay. Okay, so I will, thank you, Steve, for that point. I will definitely reach out to my colleague, policy colleague, to see whether that question has been addressed, and if so, where, and what are the answers, and provide that as a information. So if that is acceptable, then maybe transliteration could be a way forward. You know, if people desires, of course, that also have to resolve the question, who should bear the burden. Okay, so what I hear is the current conclusion in this section is, we would like to recommend the issues report on the subject. In the interim, the working group recommend that the directory service output should at least include tags to identify language and scripts. For example, using RFC 5646. Thus, at the moment, those who need translate or transliterate would at least know what language and script the contact information is in. So that's kind of the interim, the most immediate recommendation is, if we are besides anything else. Okay, do people have questions or issues with that? Hello?
We're still here.
Anyway,
I can't speak for the others, but I'm still here.
Sorry, I'm talking to a... Sometimes my phone quality is not very good, so I need to... Okay, so section 4.4, is it suitable to introduce display specifications to deal with the internationalized domain name registration data? So the answer is yes, because while standards defined for domain labels, there's no standard format required for other elements of registration data. And here I also move some text. Here is the working group concluded that the community would benefit from a standard registration data schema, for example, in XML. It lists the benefits of a schema. This was a text from the previous sections. From the outline document. I just put them here as they most logically fit. So we have section 4.5. Is the HUID system capable to handle the query and display of internationalized registration data? I said yes, but with limits. So basically saying that the protocol does not specify anything, and in absence of that, various registries or registrars have their own ad hoc solutions to support IRD, and then continued deployment of such ad hoc solutions would raise user experience and interoperability issues. So for example, a user would not know, would have to remember, from registries to registries how, what kind of ways he or she needs to do in order to enable, the submission display of internationalized registration data. And that is, have serious interoperability issues. It also brings issues to clients, because the Whois clients may not know what the server is requiring to handle, so they don't know how to flag to do that. So that is a mess to be in with. And I just say these issues need to be addressed urgently. Any comments on that section? And then 4.6 is the last one. Is it feasible to introduce submission and display specifications? Well, actually, I do have this submission and display somehow. So I say yes, most data have existing standards that apply to them, and those should be considered. In addition, there are schema templates that I've been working on in the past, and those should be considered. So that's it. And then...
So this is Jim. Let me just jump in here for a moment and use this as a stopping point. We are here at the top of the hour, and I wanted to take some time to schedule when our next meeting would be. So having said that, let me just pause for a moment and let Steve, close down his thing if folks want to offer any comments up through Section 4.6 here at this point. And otherwise, let's save talking about the recommendations for our next meeting. So last call for comments.
Just on last call, I will be sending in a couple minor things in a form I've been editing, but things I didn't think were worth bringing up at the moment.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So thank you. Any editorial comments I really appreciate. Any major issues I appreciate too. But if you have any major issues, I would encourage you to raise it directly on the mailing list. Okay. Yeah. But so yes, thank you, Avery. Before I end, I also want to know what does the working group think? There are some reviewers provided comments, for example, John Clinton from the IETF. I was thinking you know, whether the working group felt it's okay that, you know, we send in, you know, a pre-published version to him to review for some comments.
And
address those if you have any, so that, you know, we can get some feedback from the IETF experts to make sure everything they're okay.
As a general rule, I would recommend that any time you think John Clemson might have an opinion on what you're writing and something he'll read, send it to him early.
Okay. Thanks. Any other object of sending a pre-published version once we're done for him to review? He will probably submit through public comment anyway. So, yes, just give him more time. Okay, I didn't hear any objections, so I will try to see back. Jim, over to you.
Okay, thank you, Steve, and thanks to everyone for being here today and participating this far. Our group is really getting a little bit thin these days, but it's a good group and been good, some good discussion. I'd like to suggest that we just have our next meeting next week and go through the recommendations and any other comments that people want to bring up, you know, up through sections 4.6. Steve does have a couple of editor's notes. I think, Steve, are you going to try to fill those out during this week?
Yes, I will.
Okay.
I think none of them are major except the translation and transliteration section, which I need to check with Samart.
Right. So whatever you can put together by, say, Wednesday, Thursday morning at the latest, and then, you know, distribute an updated copy by then,
okay,
so that we are ready for next Monday's meeting. And if no one objects, let me just suggest that we meet next Monday and ask Steve if we could at least send out a reminder about next week's meeting, you know, as soon as we can make that happen today or tomorrow.
Okay. Gisela, are you on the line? Okay. I'll remind Gisela to send a reminder.
Sorry, I'm on the line. Sorry, I'm here.
Okay. Would you be able to send a reminder maybe by Wednesday that we'll have a meeting next Monday?
Yes, no problem. Not only will it be sent out when I send the MP3 recording today, but I will send a reminder out during the week.
Okay. Thank you. Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. Muted phone. Last chance. Any other business from anyone? And hearing none, then we're adjourned. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you, everyone. Bye-bye.